Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm with
Rob Ophir,
Ben Hunter,
Sarah McDilling, and you have to say that it's Booktopia on.
And we're doing Booktopia on, okay? Booktopia on. And what is Booktopia on today?
Well, I thought it was on.
Yeah, it's not on that.
Yeah. So we all planned for it to be on.
It's not going
to
be that.
So what is it going to be?
It's going to be our favorite books, like of all time. Like our favorite books. Like, it could be one book if you're that kind of sad person, but it most likely will spill out and you'll just be naming the best books you've ever read.
This is like my nightmare because there's one thing that I can't do, which is that think of any book when people ask me, what are your favorite book? Or what is your favorite movie? Or what is your favorite anything? And everything you've ever loved flies right out of your head.
Jane Eyre, do you?
It's a good question to ask someone if you want to make an enemy out of them.
Yeah, it's a horrible question.
So what's your favorite thing in your life? Though. What do you hold dear?
Please whittle down. Think of every book you've ever read and select the best ones.
Yes, that's my question.
Well, we can do it. I'm just going to say it's stressful. And yes, Jane Eyre's on my list, but it's not my whole list. I need to think about it. Someone else go first.
Ben's got a list. I can see the list from here.
Ben did writing on paper.
He took so long to come down to this podcast because he got a whiff of the subject.
Yeah, and there was a change in the air.
He's put a list together.
This is wild scribble of things that have had great... There's no way you can say, oh, this is the best book ever. Well, I can't. I can certainly say these books have profoundly changed... Or in some way profoundly changed the way I operate as a human being and have broadened my horizon, have been, you know, it's like if life were a video game, there are some books that are kind of like checkpoints, like save levels. You gotta get to this bit and beat this little mega boss and then you move to the next sort of level. There are certain books, you know, yeah, you know, Chekhov, Proust, that are just a level
up. You read
up.
Proust?
I tried. Can a book be one of
if
your favorite books?
If you only tried to read it, does it make the list?
But then, you know, have you talked, John, about reading Austen every year?
Yeah, so if you read Swan's Way, I think you've read, you can say you've
We've
read
had
Proust.
This conversation, John. Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. And if that's the case, then I've read Proust.
Yeah, so. The rest of it's just padding.
Yeah, the rest of it's just padding, yeah.
But, you know, Proust is the most beautiful challenge you can ever set for yourself. You know, I still am a young person, but when I was an even younger person, I thought, you know, being a smart guy and being a good reader was all about challenging yourself to, you know, read War and Peace, read the Bible front to back, read Proust, read these enormous things so you can say, I've done it. And then, you know, if you just wade through this marathon of text, then you'll somehow become a better, smarter person.
And the idea that there's an end to the list. And then you're like, oh, I've done it now. I've read all the important books. I'm finished.
out of all that big and extensive reading, trying and failing at reading Proust is probably one of the best experiences ever. Even just that first 20 pages of Swan's Way when it talks about trying to fall asleep at night. Is just sublime.
Why did you stop then?
I have life. Life is this horrible thing that gets in the way of reading.
Yeah. Now, the thing with
find life, a horrible thing that gets in the way of reading.
That's what life is. It's a horrible
Pretty
thing.
Good description.
Yeah. And I think that reading Proust in enormous, luxurious chunks is the way you read Proust. Mm. And we don't often get that much time to do it, you know, 4 hours in a row. Of reading. We do get on weekends, but then you've got this nice gap. And then I think if you were just to... That's all you were doing? Like, I've always thought of prison sentence for Proust. You
know, yeah, so. That'd be good.
Yeah.
I feel like there'll be things in prison that will get in the way of your reading, John.
My relationships in prison are between me and my fellow inmates.
In a few years, I'll turn 30. I'm thinking about saving a whole packet of money and renting a really bad Airbnb for, like, 2 months in Paris. And just holing up and reading Proust.
You got to put cork lined rooms so you can't hear anything, just like
English. I think there'll be a really shitty apartment. There'll be rioting outside, people smashing bottles and arguing. There'll be smoke coming in the window.
So why run the B&B?
No. I'm just going to get a crappy room.
I'm having trouble with everyone's hypotheticals today.
And just read. I love Proust. Just try it. Try it. I know it's horrible and you won't win, but it's so worth trying.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Well, you're inspiring me to try it. I've never tried it, but I would want to finish it.
Yeah,
is, it, is that impossible?
No, no, it's fine.
No, it's not. It's very possible. Many people don't.
People read it again and again.
I plan to finish it one day.
Robert, I'm going to turn to you, Robert, because you've got what a piece of paper as well.
Oh, I've got a piece of paper, nothing on it.
No, because you put down some freaky unknown titles, which are going to annoy everyone listening, which is
let's
great.
Let's hear about
let's
them.
Let's hear some.
Well, the first one was, the one that I always throw out there and scare people with is a thing called The Manuscript Found in Saragossa by a Polish gentleman called Jan Patocki. And it's a weird surrealist story within a story within a story within a story within a story. And it's a guy who's in a war and he's just won the battle. He comes into the ruins of a town and he's having a break and getting something to eat. He's a, he's a general or something. And he sits down and he finds this old book, manuscript, and he starts reading it. The manuscript tells of another person who is traveling, who comes across a book. Within the book is a book. It goes on and on and on, but there are various stories that happen in each level. And the book, the manuscript found in Saragossa, moves within these different levels back and forth. It's a mind-blowing thing. It scares a lot of people that I've given it to.
I'm scared just hearing that.
It's just wonderful.
I'm intrigued.
But what's that, Hotel Budapest? Isn't that story within...
They
ripped it off, didn't they?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
So, but it's a similar thing to parts of the Arabian Nights, the original full thing of the Arabian Nights.
The story never ends.
Yeah. There's, because cool. In the Arabian Nights, there's a person who is held in prison who tells a story to another prisoner about a story about somebody who's travelling through a distant land, etc. And then there's a story within that, etc., etc. It's great. And that's another book that I love to read.
I'm so happy I've got this on my shelf at home. So this is not rare for me.
So that's one of those ones that you haven't read but you own?
No, yeah. So 90% of my books I haven't read, so I just keep piling them up.
Now it's been endorsed.
It's been endorsed by Robert. So Robert has had 30 years in bookselling and is a massive reader.
And such a good ability to really, like, make you interested in a book by talking about
it. We should put him into some sort of position where he's selling books.
Novel idea. Novel bit of book.
I mean, the thing with looking for your favourite book is that you're looking back at different cells.
Yes.
You're looking at different times.
Yeah.
And you say, okay, I was passing through a landmark phase there. Okay, there was a phase there where, as far as I was concerned, the best was H.G. Wells. That phase I've moved past, but I still enjoy H.G. Wells and I go back and read it occasionally, but it's not my favourite books of all time. But it was at that moment. It was incredible to me. Same with people like Kurt Vonnegut or Milan Kundera or Haruki Murakami. It's all these people that you move through and you love it. And while you're there, you're going, this is incredible. I remember going up to people and saying, you've got to read Orhan Pamuk. You've got to. Yes, snow. It's about snow. It's about all sorts of other stuff. I can't explain it. Read it. And they come back and go, oh, I can't get into this. And it's like, yeah, no, there's something there that really touched me.
That's why I think with those kind of recommendations, you should be chucking them on the shelf. And so that you... The Robert person who fell in love with snow can happen for that person at the right time. If they have it on their shelf and then they come in contact with it at the right moment,
totally.
Bang, it happens. But if you haven't got it on your shelf, you can't do that.
Yeah.
So you got to always have these books ready.
Yeah.
I like to never hear a recommendation without feeling confident that the book is at home. And if it's not at home, then you just buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also find it really difficult to do these, like, best of all times without going back to, like, those books you read as a kid that really inspired you and made you love books, because that's sort of, you trace it all back to, why do I do so much of this reading thing?
And, yeah, well,
and
what's going on there?
From those childhood loves.
Yeah. Isn't my money gone?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All that money that I don't know.
So what do you got there?
okay, what do I have? Okay, so yes, Jane Eyre is probably my favourite. It's the book that I've read the most often. I just keep going back to it, and now it's like when I reread Jane Eyre, it's not even.
Was it so you much only read White's Against OC like last year?
No, I read White's Against OC in high school, and okay. I was like, Not my Rochester.
There was someone who was, I think, in their 30s, who was just obsessed over Jane, same as you, who had never read White's Case of Sea.
And you were like, here you go, let me ruin your favourite book. See, I don't think that White's Case of Sea ruins Jane Eyre. I just find I'm really able to separate those things in my mind. Like with To Kill a Mockingbird and Ghost at a Watchman, I like them both. I don't consider them to be sequential. Like, they're different riffs on a theme. Like, they're different. I'm happy for other people to take over the story and do something different with it, and then it doesn't necessarily touch the other book. That's why I can endlessly read any kind of Jane Austen retelling.
So you definitely have Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre above all of Austen?
Well, see, so, yeah, probably, but it's
is that because
very
of just
close.
The enjoyment of reading? Or
it's become a place now. Yeah. Like, it's a place, like, that book is so familiar to me that I can read it and feel at home.
Mm.
So, and I've got that with Jane Austen as well, but I don't know, there's something about... I think the spooky gothicness of Jane Eyre that just appeals a little bit more to my natural gloominess.
So what about, you also went through, like, you've read a lot of crime. You've got, like, there's a whole other side to you where you sort of wander through some of the best popular fiction that's ever been written.
Yeah, so, like, for Sarah's best hits of all time, it's kind of like I have to pick one from every genre to sort of cover all my bases. But I have to have Austen and I have to have... So, but it would be Persuasion. So, Persuasion, Jane Eyre. I have to put Great Expectations on. It's going to be a very, like, boring list, right? It's really, like, it's predictable. But then with crime, like, there is something so perfect to me about, like, a old-fashioned crime novel. It's like when I read an Agatha Christie novel or Dorothy L. Sayers' book or even the Georgette Heyer crime ones, to me it's like just such a perfectly crafted puzzle. And like there's, I love the construction of it as much as I love the actual
so story. Satisfying too.
Yeah, it is really satisfying. And when it's done well,
yes,
and neatly and with some humour,
yes,
I just think it's art to me. And so, I don't know, my favourites, Dorothy L. Sayers' Strong Poison is a favourite for me. I also, in Agatha Christie, I guess, maybe Death on the Nile.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah, I can just read them again and again, and I just always sort of find something else to admire about it. But that's very, it's a very different reading experience. It's not as immersive as some others. It's more like, it's honestly like just sitting back and admiring a really good puzzle that someone else has put together, if that makes sense.
There's some favourites that you look at, and in my mind, are like favourite meals. It's like, oh, why don't we, on Sunday afternoon, go and get some of this and sit in the park and eat it? It's, you can look at certain books, like I go and read Raymond Chandler every couple of years.
Yeah.
I just love it. It's not, I can't call it my favourite books of all time. I can't say they're high art, but they're just so
satisfying. Dashiell Hammett as well. Yeah. Like, there's just something about it. It's kind of, and especially when you stumble on those ones that you feel, and you're not always right about this because it's hard to trace back the birth of a cliche, but when you stumble across something that to you feels like, this is where that cliche came from, it's just a bit... It's just amazing. And I get that with Wilkie Collins' books a lot. Like, I feel like he probably didn't originate all these things, but, you know, he would have got it from somewhere. But to me, a lot of the time when I'm reading it, I'm just like, oh, that's like, I've seen that so many times. And I really love The Legacy of Cain. Like, to me, that is a gorgeously soap opera-ish, amazing, gothic extravaganza of, like, dramatic goodness. I just love it. I love it. Also The Woman in White. I don't know. Now I have to feel like I have to switch genres, so I'm going to quickly pop over to fantasy and go into childhood fantasies that I feel really strongly shaped me to this day, which would be The Blue Sword by Robin McKinley. That book, like, blew my young mind. I was just like, this is amazing. Like, I loved it. I loved everything about it. And it set me on a quest, which when I was young was a little bit harder for me than it would be for girls now, which was finding books with girls that have swords and do adventures. And the girl had to be the main character. And so that led me to Tamora Pierce. And then that led me to other authors like Sharon Shin. Isabel Carmody. 100% Isabel Carmody. I can't believe she wasn't the first one out of my head. Yeah, Isabel Carmody. I wouldn't be a reader if it weren't for Isabel Carmody's books. But yeah, so, and I don't know, I'm going to not stop talking. You should not have opened this Pandora's box, John. But I will just throw in, and this has been in my mind because of William Golding dying recently, but it reminded me of how much I loved the Princess Bride book and how much it really makes me, I got it wrong again, didn't I? It's Goldman.
Yes, it's Goldman.
That's all I do. I constantly do that. So not Lord of the Flies, guys, but the Princess Bride book and how I love books within books, kind of like what you were talking about, like a story that is a framing device for another story. I'll have a break. John.
Well, I didn't even think about that, because you were talking about these kind of books that you go to have a picnic with, you reread. And for me, when I think about it, if I look at which book do I continually go back to, which is the book that I think is just absolutely perfect, and it's Room with a View. I just think that book is just perfect, and I love it. And every time I read it, I love it. I listen to it on audio, I love it. There's never been a time when I haven't loved it, you know. And I go, and Ian Forster was my first literary love. I just fell deeply in love with him and read everything I could at 18. But I've been reading him periodically for years, and I've changed over those years, and I've learned more from his books about how to write, how to think. And I still feel with Howard's End, which is probably the, it's not as much as a joy as Room of the View, but is so much better of a book. Like if I was going to rank them, Howard's End is sublime. Like it's of another level altogether. And it has stuff in there that I still haven't worked out. Like I'm still not up to the level of Ian Forster to kind of get the full message of that book. He's talking about love in a way that people don't talk about in most books when they talk about love. And I think there's a lesson in there for everyone, because it's a much more forgiving idea of love. There's something, there's movement there, which isn't in other things. So for me, like he's one of my first, and he's continued on right through. But there've been like reads that, changed the way I thought about what I was able to do. Cause I was always the dummy at school. So, not being a great reader and not really knowing what to do, I sort of had to stumble across. And I would build up imaginary walls around myself before, allowing myself into the next pasture. You know, I'd go, well, there's no way I'm going to be able to read that. That's just way too big. You know, like Dickens was one of those, and Austen was one of those, and I conquered those. And I went, holy hell, these are fantastic. Dostoevsky was one of those, just because of the goddamn name. The name was enough for me, just to get that name. And Crime and Punishment just smashed the wall, and there was no more wall. And Crime and Punishment was one of those books that is so all-encompassing, and it devours you as you devour it, and you live it in such a physical way. And he's hyper-real, Dickens is hyper-real in that way, unlike Tolstoy. But it works. It works so well. And so I went right through of all of Dostoevsky, and that was a massive overcoming. It kind of, once I did that, I felt there's no one out there that I can't give a go, go at.
I struggled with Dickens when I was young, but then similarly reading From the Underground and Crime and Punishment in particular, there was this fantastic quickening when I was involved with the book in a way that was so much more than just intellectual. It was all encompassing.
Yeah,
which I could never fathom getting that from a classic, and then having that become real for me just opened all these doors.
I hated it the first time I read it. Hated it, and I had come off. I'd read and loved Les Misérables, and so I was like, okay.
To me, they're very similar kind of books, because they got because I think Dostoevsky and Hugo and Dickens are the kind that hit the right marks on humanity, but just enlarge it a tiny little bit. It's not realism. And so I think there's kind of a similarity between.
Well, I was trying to find something that I liked as much as that, and I went from that to Crime and Punishment, and I was like, something about it just, I was definitely too young. and I read it and I was just like, no, because it took me too places that were just a little bit too dark for me at that age. And I was like disturbed by it and angry that I had read it. And I was like, I decided right then and there, no, I hate Crime and Punishment. Then like fast forward 10 years or something and I read it again. I was like, oh, right. Okay. I should have probably not read that when I was that young. And it's funny how that happens. There's a few books that it's happened with, but you know, you have.
That's one thing about literature is you. I mean, I used to get in such trouble. I'm probably going to get in trouble now. It's better than us, right? There's this arrogance with modern people and modern readers, and a lot of readers who approach these things and go, well, that's not very good, and toss it aside. And you're like, no, no, no. It's far better than you. Treat it with some respect and then come back later when you've grown up. And when you've lived a bit more and you've had a, just don't toss it aside. This is tossing aside. I can't immediately get into it. It's not really.
It's like a child sipping Highland whiskey for the first time. Oh, it tastes like medicine though.
Yeah, well, don't give children whiskey though.
Yeah, it's
like a child eating an olive for the first time.
But it's completely foreign to you when you first get a taste of it, and you have to give it respect.
Drinks more whiskey.
But some of it's appetite for different days as well. So you might be capable of understanding it and taking it on, but it's the wrong day.
Because you
feel like something lighter, or you feel like something heavier, or you feel like something totally different. It's a textural thing that your appetite that day works.
Yeah. My rule of thumb is always if you have a strong reaction to something, then strong negative reaction to something really, then it's worth revisiting because it elicited emotion out of you. So it did something to you and maybe it's not what you wanted then, but it's worth going back to. I will rarely go and revisit something that I felt meh about, but I'll revisit something that I think I don't like because, you know.
Well, we live in a very privileged position because we are surrounded by books all the time. There are people who can't find the right book at the right time because they've got two books on the shelf. Well, they got five books on the shelf, two of them they've read. Yeah. And so they're expanse of things they can make a choice out of. That's why I love secondhand bookshops. I love, garage sales where you can just buy a whole lot for $10 and just throw them on the shelf. And one day, somewhere in the future, you hope that you'll meet the book at the right time and you'll gobble it down. Because it's so frustrating when you see someone butt up against a book and you feel they're never going to do that again. They're never going to even pick it up again. And you think
they might not pick any book up again.
Yeah, it's the other thing. They might not. And that's one of the tough things about being a bookseller and why it's kind of really important not to be that kind of bookseller that forces the wrong book on the wrong person at the wrong time. You've really got to really work out exactly who you're giving this book to and why and what kind of readers they've been to make sure they don't just bounce off it. And because you could lose them. You could lose them as a reader.
Yeah, and as a reader, it's just something to keep in mind. Like, you're not going to love every book that you pick up, but keep picking them up.
Can I return to something that Ben said really early on in this podcast? That sense of having to challenge it and to read these books because of their reputation, I suppose. Now, do you guys feel that? I mean, I know that we've had arguments in the past about sort of the books you ought to read, and you know, Sarah is much more open than I am, and I'm getting more and more as I get older.
I think you ought to read everything. Yeah. That's my idea.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I sat for 15 years and I just kept to a certain standard. I was like, if it's not being considered as one of the great works of literature, then I'll read that when I'm done. You know, I'm going to read as much as I can. And it, you know, I had the opportunity of sitting in a bookshop having 8 hours, no boss, and I could read and only be interrupted by annoying customers. And so I got through a lot of reading and I don't feel like I've even begun. Like there's no way in a lifetime you actually get through any of this stuff. And then, so when you're looking at your future, how do you make the choices? Like there are so many things to read and so little time.
I don't think it should ever be in your head, what should I read or what am I supposed to read? The question should always be, what do I feel like reading right now? And, you know, the more you read, the more adventurous you become in your tastes. So if you are someone, and I don't know why we would be speaking to these people in this book podcast, but say you're a person who for some reason is listening to this and doesn't read, then all you should do is consider, what do I enjoy? Like, what movies do I enjoy? What do I get a kick out of? Read books like that and keep reading them until you're like, I want something different. And then your tastes will develop. Like the same way that you change as you grow older, you will keep reading and keep seeking things out. Keep speaking to other people who read, and then they'll recommend you things, and you'll read outside your comfort zone.
I've seen too many people lose themselves to a genre and never come out, and they just read the same stuff.
I don't get that, because don't you get sick of it? It's like eating the same meal every day.
There's a lot of people who don't get sick of it. They just gobble down, and they feel so much comfort within that realm. And that's always worried me, is that if you leave it up, like if you don't have the kind of guide that Ben's been given,
you gotta respect that. You know, I'm not saying that you don't, but there's some people that just find something that resonates with them, and then they get they become a superhero of that realm. I'm thinking of the conversation we had with AJ Finn when he was in here and talking about, you know, writing a PhD on Patricia Highsmith and having read every single psychological thriller in existence pretty much in the English language and becoming an expert of the form. He's like an Olympic athlete in that little, like that's his 50-minute freestyle.
Yeah, I think that's how your brain works, and you're just not interested.
He probably likes other sports as well, but that's what he's, it's his jam. Mm.
You can specialize. But
we've got a whole lot of things on that list you haven't mentioned. Do you want to just chuck a few out there into the...
Okay, so... there's too many white men on this.
What are you talking about?
let's just throw in Henry Hannah Richardson and Christina Stead. Because they're divine. They should have had the Nobel Prize both.
Catcher in the Rye, Holden Caulfield, that character completely just kicked me from the back of the shin and just knocked me over and made me rebuild myself as a human being.
I had a bit of a crush on him.
I loathed and loved him in this equal...
Well, the great thing about that character is he's both loathed and loved. Like that's what is so attractive. And in your teens, in the fiction that we're giving so many teens, it's you're either or. Well, Lisa's nicely bound in this messy boy man that is just handed over to teens to work out themselves.
There's this strange black and white moralism coming up in young people's literature at the moment, it's odd, isn't it?
Yeah, I have to like the character. You're like, really? Do you have to?
I don't know if that's true in terms of...
Isn't that a YA expert speaking?
No, I would disagree with that. I think that sometimes the absolute most popular themes of a genre aren't always an example of what's going on in that genre. Mm. And if you were to take a broad look at YA and look at the absolute mega, mega bestsellers, then I'm not going to name any names, but you might think that it's very plain good versus evil. But I think that if you're reading widely in that genre, there's amazing things being done, especially within Australia.
But you know, when you read this book and Holden Caulfield, if you were able to take a core sample of him and just how messed up he is.
Yeah.
It would go quite deep. Like the confusion would be very deep into that particular character.
Uh-huh.
Right? And often it's just an armor they're wearing in a story. It's not, the character isn't rich enough for one, rich enough in the sense that Holden Caulfield is rich, in a lot of modern fiction. Like, that's something we haven't really talked about because we have skirted around. Like, we're not talking about books published this year, are we?
Well, when you talk about the favourite of all time, it kind of limits you a little bit because you feel this, like, weight of choosing all of the books that have ever been written. And unfortunately, more books have been written outside of 2018 than have been written within it.
Yeah.
That's just the fact.
What books that were written this year do you think will hang around?
I think normal people will hang
definitely
around.
Definitely normal people. Boys Follows Universe.
And also Julian Barnes as well, because
Julian Barnes has proven for himself me to be. Is that this new one,
The Only Story,
surpasses Sense of an Ending for me, and that's my personal feeling on it, and it's a book that made me reevaluate so much,
and it hasn't done anything. I don't understand why didn't they just hand him the book. I don't get it. And the sales haven't been there. And people just aren't talking about these great successes in literature in the way that they used to do it. I don't get it.
But did they? Like, at the time, did they? Or is it just that the ones like this withstand the test of time and get studied and spoken? And
I suppose if you won the book, you got talked about.
There's a lot of great books that don't get remembered and don't get talked about. And you discover them later on, or somebody becomes their champion and brings them back.
That list that was on Lit Hub, was it Lit Hub? That had the list of all the bestsellers of the of the century.
Like a decade, yeah.
And then then they had the bestsellers, and then they had also from this decade with these, and they're the ones we don't remember any of the bestsellers, and the ones from the decade are the ones we remember.
Yes, yeah.
Yes.
But that's really hard on the author.
Yeah, there's exactly. There's so many great authors that I've discovered because they've been championed by other people. People like Thomas Bernhardt and John Fante, who I love, who was championed by Charles Bukowski when John Fante was on his deathbed. Mm-hmm. And was brought back into print after Fante passed on. Amazing, fun writer, but hardly known.
Yeah.
And you read him, you just throw all your Bukowski books away, if you like Bukowski. Because Bukowski just nicked all his ideas from Fante. Nicked the whole style. But Fante was so much better. But there's a lot of others that have gone out of my head at the moment. But they're great people that sit out there, and if they're not noticed at the time, they may be noticed later on.
One of the most famous ones recently is Stoner.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Is that just, you know, that's had a few rebirths in the last 10 years because people just keep stumbling across it. And you know, the power of social media these days, if someone who has a big following goes, holy hell, have you heard about this book?
Yeah.
It could suddenly rise. I mean, I remember when Charlotte Wood was on the book club, she was talking about Wallace Stegner.
Yeah.
And no bookshop had it, like in Australia. And the publisher's like, the what? And they had to rush out there and do a reprint, and everyone was reading Wallace Stegner suddenly. You know, those kind of things are just magical. But that's life in secondhand bookshop, though.
Absolutely.
Because in secondhand bookshop, anyone could walk in, massive readers or part-time readers, and give you really amazing recommendations, and you'd have it on the shelf, and you'd go, oh, got that. Yeah. I'll give that a go.
Well, sometimes you just pick up a book you've never seen, you've never heard of it, and you read the back of it, and you go, hey, this looks kind of weird. Let's have a look at this.
Mademoiselle de Maupin by Théophile Gautier. It was just a book in one of those red covers that had nothing on the back, nothing on the front, didn't have anything about it. But I read the first page, and I was like, because it felt new, it felt modern. And I went, you're not modern. What's going on here? And I just sat in my little chair at the back of my shop and just read for the next 3 hours. And, you know, those are the joys of being in that sort of circumstance.
Totally. The serendipity of being a secondhand book dealer is something I'll never forget.
Yeah.
Because you didn't know what was going to come in a box any minute.
Hey, I spent plenty of time, and I still do, in secondhand books. I've never worked there, but I've clocked my hours.
Yeah, we have to finish up.
We've got to finish this.
How long has it gone? 3-4 hours? How many hours?
We've gone half
an hour. It's only gone for half an hour. I still wanted to hear some things from Ben.
We'll just call this part one. Can we call this part one?
Yeah, we can definitely do that.
Yeah, sure. Because I think we've...
But that means everyone has to jot down all the books they've spoken about and then not speak about them in part two.
Because I haven't even mentioned my favourite books.
Yeah, it's
this
just...
This is how it works. This is how it's
started. I feel like I'm already haunted by all the ones I didn't talk about.
Yeah, I didn't get to ask you a little of the Queen.
So tune in next time. Thank you.
Booktopia. Wednesdays at 11.
Yes, Wednesdays at 11.
See you then.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.